critics of the war, who are numerous and articulate, are for the most part left out of the televised debate, and having only one side, the pro-war side, amplified over and over, simply feeds this perception among the American public that war must be the way to go. Because look at, I'm looking at television news programs, I'm listening to the radio, and everything I hear tells me we have to take out Saddam Hussein.
John, we have to let it go right there. John Stauber is executive director for PR Watch, and the website for PR Watch is www.prwatch.org. If people aren't online and want to get a hold of you the old-fashioned way via the phone, how can they do that?
The old-fashioned way, they can call us at our office in Madison, Wisconsin. The number there is 608-260-9713. For people who do have web access, this article, War is Sell, will be posted in about 10 days on our website. It's out in PR Watch right now, and our website, again, is prwatch.org.
And people can subscribe to PR Watch that way?
We would highly encourage it.
And don't forget that book, Trust Us, We're Experts, written by John Stauber and his co-author, Sheldon Rampton.
John, thank you very much. Have a happy new year.
Thank you. Same to you. Bye-bye.
It is 8:31 in the a.m. Coming up after the news headlines, we're going to reflect on the year that was for Pacifica Radio. So stay tuned for that. Right now, time for the news headlines.
Good morning, everyone. A Southern Baptist Convention official says the group's members will continue to serve abroad despite today's attack. A gunman shot and killed three American missionary workers and wounded a fourth at a hospital in southern Yemen today. The workers were with the Southern Baptist Convention's International Mission Board. The official says he wasn't aware of any specific threats against the hospital and doesn't know what motivated today's shooting rampage. The gunman has been arrested. And rescue workers are giving up the search for survivors of two truck explosions. Two truck bombs exploded in the government compound in the Chechen capital of Grozny on Friday. Today, Russian President Vladimir Putin said he would not let the suicide bombing derail plans for a political settlement in the war-torn territory. And South Korea says North Korea may be preparing to pull out of a global nuclear arms control treaty. In 1993, North Korea announced it was withdrawing from the non-proliferation treaty, but backed off when the U.S. agreed to talks. Those talks resulted in a 1994 deal. North Korea now says the U.S. has violated that agreement by halting promised energy supplies. Meanwhile, officials in Moscow are expressing concern over the decision by North Korea to kick out the U.N.'s nuclear inspectors and to start work again at a nuclear energy complex. They are calling on North Korea not to back out of the treaty aimed at stopping the spread of nuclear weapons. And according to today's Dalbar report, millions of Americans have lost unemployment benefits, and that number could increase if Congress doesn't act soon.
$1.8 million jobless Americans have exhausted their unemployment benefits, according to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. The percentage of unemployed workers exhausting benefits before finding work is now at a record level. And with each passing week, an estimated 95,000 more will have no source of income. That means unless Congress acts quickly to extend unemployment benefits, another 1.2 million Americans will run out of benefits by the end of March.
And weather for the San Francisco Bay Area today, there will be a chance of rain, highs in the upper 40s to mid-50s. Stay tuned to KPFA, where there will be continued news coverage throughout the day. I'm Kelly Denson, sitting in for Chris Bruni. The morning show continues.
I like that music. It seemed like the activity of the news happening on Pacifica, and then pow, here we are now at the end of a year that was really quite something. And I remember about this time last year we were struggling, trying to figure out whether we should fundraise, what were we going to do, because we still hadn't gained control of the Pacifica National Board. And then shortly thereafter, We did. The dissidents gained control of the board, hopefully with the idea of returning this network to its original roots. We were all very happy at that time. But where are we now, and what have we done, and where are we going? We're really pleased to be joined in the studio by Matthew Lazar. He's Pacifica historian, author of the book Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network. Matthew, thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Well, it is nice to be here under these circumstances where, you know, we raised over $1 million here at KPFA for the first time ever. It seems that more than ever, Pacifica is needed, and we're certainly feeling like we're doing a lot better than we were this time last year. So maybe I'll just ask you to start with overall your feelings about where the network is right now.
Well, a year ago, or maybe a year and a month ago, I think maybe a little bit more than that, Marion Barry, who was just added onto the Pacifica board by the old board majority, walked into the KPFA news department. And he announced that democracy was coming to Pacifica, as I recall. I subsequently read a book about Marion Barry, and there's a wonderful quote in which he was asked what his political philosophy is, and he said, "I'm a situationist. I do whatever the situation is." and I think that pretty much fits the role he's played since then, which is that he's been part of this effort to democratize the organization. It didn't come a moment too soon, mm-hmm. actually. Dan Coughlin was kind enough to ask me to go to Washington,
D.C. Dan Coughlin is executive director of the foundation.
Executive director of the Pacifica Foundation was kind enough to ask me to go to Washington, D.C. and do some filing of the old Pacifica papers, the recent Pacifica papers, actually. And there I found a complete mess. I mean, the place was a complete, utter disaster in terms of files and stuff like that. They had left behind what looked like a hurricane hit it. Almost immediately found a check for $10,000, which had not been opened.
No.
In fairness to them, there was so much protest mail everywhere that I think that they had just stopped opening their mail. But I did find in an unopened envelope this document from a company called Radio America, which I believe distributes Oliver North's programming. It's dated October 9th, 2001, and it's addressed to Robert Farrell, who was briefly the chair of Pacifica, Ken Ford, a former national board member, and Joanne Meredith, the former employee of the Pacifica Foundation. And I'll read the beginnings of it. It says, "Dear Sirs, this letter follows up on telephone conversations I had this morning with Mr. Ford and Ms. Meredith concerning news reports that the Pacifica Foundation is experiencing financial difficulties and may consider selling some or all of its radio stations. Radio America is interested in pursuing a business relationship with the Pacifica Foundation concerning the sale, management, and or programming of WPFW Washington, D.C. That's our Washington, D.C. station, mm-hmm. and other Pacifica stations. We are prepared to make a financial offer that enhances existing programming, expands community and public interest content, and provides a cash revenue stream to Pacifica. We propose three possible business combinations for your consideration: sale or license transfer of WPFW and other stations to Radio America, leasing of WPFW, or sale of broadcast time on WPFW or other stations for clearance of Radio America network programs." Now,
wow. Is that the smoking gun, so to speak?
I actually called up the gentleman who sent this letter, and I asked him if there had been any follow-up. And, of course, there hadn't been any follow-up on this conversation, because shortly after that, the board, we settled and we created the new settlement, and these three individuals moved on. But it is a statement about how close we were and how precarious the situation was, that despite the fact that they were publicly saying that they were not going to sell a station, they had obviously invited this person to send them some kind of a follow-up letter about this conversation that they were having. I also found a document that may interest some people, which is essentially...
Well, before you go to the second document, that first document from Radio America is dated October 29th, 2001. So that's a year and 3 months ago.
That's a year and 3 months ago. It's basically just before we won.
Yeah.
And you're clear that it's a follow-up, not something we just kind of heard that this was happening and we thought we'd offer some help.
Well, it says here, this letter follows up on telephone conversations I had this morning with Mr. Ford and Ms. Meredith.
Okay. So your second document.
My second document is a document which is a memorandum, which was clearly an attempt by the Pacifica Foundation to relocate in Washington, D.C., not just as a headquarters, but as a nonprofit corporation. It's a letter from Garvey, Schubert, and Bearer, one of the attorneys that they hired, and it basically tracks the necessary steps to form a Pacifica Foundation as a new District of Columbia nonprofit corporation, and then to merge the existing Pacifica Foundation, a California nonprofit public benefit corporation, into the new D.C. incorporated Pacifica. So in other words, they were essentially trying to figure out a way to merge the entire Pacifica Foundation into a new foundation, and then presumably to better control the situation from there.
Well, the problem they had with Pacifica Foundation being incorporated in the state of California was that all the litigation would happen in California courts, and also under the purview of the Attorney General of California, Lockyer, who has been sympathetic to the KPFA.
And the memorandum acknowledges the fact that would be a difficult course of action because of that. We owe Bill Lockyer and the Attorney General a tremendous debt of thanks. Without him, I think that it would have been much easier for them to go about what they wanted to go about doing.
So that's my next question, Matthew Lazar. Why, if we came this close to selling as part of the network and some of the other things you mentioned, what in your mind was the main thing that was a Bill Lockyer that made us go in the other direction that finds us where we are now?
You know, one of the things that's so interesting going through all the papers and everything like that is that this wasn't just, it was a fight over Pacifica Radio. But when I look at all the different people who were involved in it, the Attorney General of California, the head of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, all the people who weighed in, the Congressional Black Caucus, the State Assembly of New York, the City Council of New York, people in the AFL-CIO, the State Assembly of California, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee of California, it was so big, it stretched out into... And the fight extended into so many different sectors of American society. And what's interesting to me is that as soon as the settlement took place, or shortly after the settlement took place, all of the media coverage and all of the attention which was directed towards the Pacifica Foundation and towards this fight almost completely disappeared, with the exception of a notable article by Jesse Walker in Salon magazine. Hardly anyone has paid attention since then to what has happened to Pacifica Radio. And in fact, the most interesting things are in some ways happening now, which is that at a time when the rest of the electronic media, is literally galloping towards a privatized system in which the Federal Communications Commission is basically considering eliminating all ownership requirements, limit requirements on corporations, so corporations can buy as many radio stations, as many television stations, own newspapers and television stations, own merge with each other. At a time when everything else is galloping towards privatization, the Pacifica Radio Organization, this admittedly comparatively small organization, is completely democratizing itself. And that's an amazing story to me, which nobody seems to be paying attention to, and which is, I think, very significant at this time, that we're just moving in this completely different direction as the rest of broadcasting.
But why, Matthew, why do you think that these stories died? Is it just because people want to hear about fighting on the left but not something good that happens?
I think that that's probably true. I think that it was interesting to people to see people outside on the street, 10,000 people demonstrating, thousands of people meeting in big halls in Los Angeles, hundreds and thousands of people meeting in New York City and demonstrating down on Wall Street. But once it stopped, I think, once the cheering and the booing stopped, I think that the media stopped being interested in what's going on.
It should be said that the Salon.com article was one. There was one other article, a hit piece in The Nation magazine, essentially accusing the dissidents who had just won this victory of essentially being like the lunatics taking over the asylum.
Well, I think that that article, which, by the way, is by a historian I tremendously respect, Susan J. Douglas, did not really deal with the issue of the future of Pacifica in a very constructive way. And it didn't really deal with the questions of democratization and how the organization is going to reconstruct itself. It was mostly a review of what had already happened.
Let me ask you why the former board majority decided to cave in a year ago.
They were falling to pieces. It was very clear from the internal documents that they were just falling to pieces.
How so? Falling in what way?
They were They were losing money. They were hemorrhaging money hand over fist. They had very little control, it's pretty clear, over anyone in the organization. Even the old staff at KPFK in Los Angeles, Mark Cooper and Mark Shubb, were in open rebellion against them. They simply did not have any control over the organization, and they didn't have any way of paying money for all of these lawyers who they had hired.
We're speaking with Matthew Lazar, who's Pacifica historian and author of the book Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network, and we want to open our phone lines to your called-in questions or comments. Our phone number here, 510-848-4425. Hey, I still remember the number, 510-848-4425. Matthew, let's talk a little bit more about where you think the network is going. You mentioned the democratization, and as we know, even in this country, which is such a bastion of supposedly democracy, that can be a very difficult process at times, you know, just trying to come up with a consensus that brings in a lot of different opinions, etc. So Where do you see the network going in the future, and what are some of the good things that you see down the road?
Well, given how difficult this process is, I think that the network is doing pretty well with it. Three of the stations throughout the network are suffering from what I call post-dictator power void syndrome. post-dictator power void syndrome, essentially that these three stations were basically run by what I would describe as strong men. Mark Shubb of KPFK in Los Angeles. Help me here. I've forgotten the former program director of WPFW all of a sudden.
Bernard Wayne?
No.
Oh, WPFW. No, I can't remember.
Anyway, the former head of WPFW was also someone who pretty much ran a pretty tight ship. And, of course, there was Garland Ganter at KPFT, who we got a taste of.
Houston.
At the time. And all three of these stations were basically run by people who had tremendous autocratic power over the life of the station. The people who fought them all agreed that they had to go. Once the station lost those three individuals, these groups of people discovered that they substantially disagreed about the future direction of the station. And this is an old Pacifica station paradigm. It most notably
sort of like the French Revolution.
It's sort of like the French Revolution, and it's sort of like what happened at KPFA in the early 1970s when Elsa Knight Thompson was essentially ousted from power. The people who succeeded her really didn't agree on what was going on, and so there's been a lot of turbulences at especially those three stations, especially KPFK, I think, and KPFT. At KPFT, you had two groups that were basically anti-Ganter groups, and once Ganter left, they found themselves and still find themselves in substantial disagreement about the direction that KPFT should go. Mostly the fight as it focuses on political issues is over the state of Israel and how Israel issues should be covered. At KPFK, it's about a lot of things. It seems to be to a large extent about diversity, about the question of how to make the station more diverse. But it's also the current general manager is really struggling for legitimacy there. And at WPFW, you have a situation in which there's an old guard which is very concerned that the station keep its cultural programming, especially its jazz programming, and a newer group of people who want to see more public affairs broadcasting there. I was at WPFW for a month, and I have to say that I thought the station is doing pretty well. I heard a lot of really wonderful programming, new programming, mm-hmm. that was there, especially a town hall forum, which I thought was quite terrific. So these stations are basically struggling pretty hard around these issues. And I think that considering how difficult these things can be so far, they're hanging on. Meanwhile, the bylaws is trying to continue. The issue of trying to reconstruct the bylaws is continuing. My understanding from the settlement agreement is that that's supposed to conclude around March. I don't think it's going to conclude around March. I think that the timeline now is for it hopefully to conclude around the summer. We really do need it. I really do think that we really need that bylaws issue to be settled. I think that there are a lot of people in this organization who called for democracy, and now there is a kind of a bit of a stepping back and a bit of a fear of democracy. not fear of falling, fear of democracy, for a wide variety of reasons. People are suddenly sort of taking a deep breath and they're saying to themselves, well, will we really be able to be more diverse under a democratic system? Will we really be a progressive network under a democratic system? Will we really be able to do whatever it is I wanted us to be able to do under a democratic system? And despite these fears, people are moving forward and they're trying to negotiate and compromise. And three of the local advisory boards throughout the network have to agree to a set of bylaws regarding their own election of national board members. And hopefully that'll go forward over the next 6 months and be concluded.
Let's go to our first caller on the line, who is Ray, calling in from the lovely city of San Francisco. Good morning, Ray.
Hi, Ray.
Hey,
what's your question or comment, Ray?
The thing is, listening to what you have to say, Matthew, is so true, things don't happen in a vacuum. And while there were internal contradictions being ventilated every day and every hour, there were reports on that in the media at large. And now that there is an effort to democratize, and this takes a long while, there doesn't seem to be very much interest, as you pointed out. But
interest in?
But, yes, in Pacifica and in the points of view, the critique that are fronted by Pacifica and Free Speech Radio News, Democracy Now!, Flashpoints, which now airs in Houston, I believe, as well.
That's right.
So in as much as this critique isn't falling on deaf ears, we would expect there to be eventually an effort to either isolate Pacifica as those loonies, quote-unquote, which will have predictable absence of success, or to try to form some counterpoint, like that organization that Oliver North is broadcasting through is definitely interested in silencing Pacifica and free speech and so on. So what do you think is the what's the bounce back on this? What can we expect from the what are we going to call them, the censors, to try to silence this effort?
Well, you know, we need to not be expecting things from them. We need to be mobilizing ourselves. I have to say that if there's one big disappointment I have about the movement to free Pacifica, it's that once the struggle was won in the immediate sense of that we got a new board, we got a new interim board, and we got a chance to reorganize the organization, we stopped looking outward. I think that as an organization, we stopped looking outward and we stopped looking at how we are going to confront the larger broadcasting paradigm and protect ourselves from its depredations, some of which I've read here. We just basically, well, all we did really in terms of the old board, all we did was we kicked those people across the street. We kicked them off the board and we basically kicked them across the street. But there, you know, the forces that brought them in are still looking at us from right across the street, trying to figure out how to get in here and how to attack us. And the way that they're doing it, essentially very, very slowly, is they're isolating everything else. They're wiping out everything else that is community-based in radio across the spectrum. That's what the Telecommunications Act of 1996 essentially did. I'm very worried about these new digital, about the new protocols that will be involved in creating a digital spectrum. It's going to be extremely expensive for community radio stations to buy digital transmitters, and that's another way that's going to marginalize community radio stations. And we need to get these bylaws done, and this is with all due respect to all the hard work and how hard it is to do this. We really need to get the bylaws done because we need to address the fact that we're being surrounded and contained by forces that want to get rid of us.
Are you also encouraged by the fact that, you know, KPFA raised, for example, $1 million for the first time ever? What does that signal to you, Matthew?
Well, it signals that people really want KPFA to be around because as a voice because of this war that seems to be almost a done deal that's coming up in, what, maybe 3-4 weeks? I think that people are really concerned about that. But I also think that we need to be looking outward rather than just inward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I was very pleased that the National Board of Pacifica passed a resolution against the Federal Communication Commission's proposals to relax all media ownership requirements. And I hope that in a future Pacifica that there are committees on all the local advisory boards and on the national board, which are essentially telecommunications committees dealing with telecommunications policy and how we as a movement, as the Pacifica movement, can influence the direction of broadcasting.
Let's go to our next caller. John's on the line from Berkeley. Good morning, John.
Good morning. I'd like to bring up a question that I've always had since the Pacifica crisis of the last several years, and that is that these events occurred during a Democratic administration. And I noticed that the moment KPFA started criticizing the Clinton administration, these attacks really started going off full bore. I noticed, too, you had Mary Frances Berry, who is the head of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, who was a Clinton appointee. And you had other people on the board who were quite sympathetic to the Clinton administration.
Well, there's one thing that the Republican and Democrats all both seem to agree on for the most part. It's that the world should be run by markets.
Mm-hmm.
That market-based solutions should be the order of the day. Both the Democratic and the Republican Party have both are both basically on board on the great privatization market-based consensus, and both have have pushed for those kind of solutions. Bill Clinton was the person who signed the Telecommunications Act of 1996. I don't think that there's a lot of difference between these two, between the two parties on that particular issue. And I think that Pacifica needs to not think that just because somebody is a Democrat, it means that they're going to have the right position on these on those kind of issues, especially those kind of issues.
Let's go to John calling in from Oakland this morning. Hi, John.
Hello. Good morning. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning.
I was in part of those meetings that kind of coalesced into townhouse-style meetings in Berkeley, and we were constantly demanding and agreeing that there should be one democracy with a small d, two, transparency in the dealings of the station and the foundation, and three, a form of truth and reconciliation commission to deal with the Pat Scott regime. But for a while, there was a feeling that if we aired these issues, especially on the air, that would cause a split in the station and hamper the fundraising efforts, and we couldn't just pay off this huge tribute that we had to pay to essentially buy back our station. So before anything goes on with the bylaws, they're being hampered by the lack of... You mentioned that some of these people are kicked across the street. Well, in Berkeley, there's still some of them in the station even, so...
This is—I don't know. I'm not sure who you're talking about or what you're alleging. Matthew, do you have any comment on this?
Well, I think that there needs to be, and there will continue to be, a series of accountings of what's happened over the last 7 or 8 years. I call the what's happened at Pacifica over the last decade. I call it the 7-year war. For lack of a better term, because it really didn't start with Mary Frances Berry and Lynn Chadwick. It actually began with a set of discussions and a set of concerns that previous administrations had about how to make the network more than the sum of its parts and greater than just 5 radio stations. And that the actions that were taken as a result of that really blew up and backfired. And the question of why that happened and how that happened, I think, is very important. I also think that it's important for people to understand that a lot of the people who were involved in creating this crisis and creating the strategic plan, as it was called, were very well intended. Did not have bad intentions. They really wanted to do something good with the organization. Unfortunately, it was not politically possible. It was not politically feasible, and it really blew up. And the question of why it blew up is a question which I think a lot of people are going to be asking over the next years, including myself in my writing.
And we will certainly keep an eye and very much interested in the future of the network. Matthew Lazar, Pacifica historian and author of Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining us as well. I'm Andrea Lewis, along with Philip Maldry, who's going to be taking the rest of the week off. So, Philip, we'll see you in 2003.
Aw.
Bye.
Bye, Philip.
Bye.
But thank you for tuning in.
You're
and
like John McLaughlin. Bye-bye.
We'll be here for the rest of the week with the rest of the Morning Show posse. I'm Andrea Lewis. The executive producer of the Morning Show is Lisa Rothman. Producers, Andrew and Philip. Assistant producers, Sally Phillips and Mickey Mason. That controls Kirsten Thomas. Tomorrow, we're actually going to talk about Michigan and how they decided to end mandatory minimum sentences for drug crimes. You're listening to KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno. Have a great day.
You are welcome to join the International Forum on Globalization for the publication launch of Alternatives to Economic Globalization, A Better World is Possible. Authors of the report